Avodah Zarah, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Ches 4:8. We now begin a whole new topic. It's the topic of Yain Nesech and Stam Yenam, which is the prohibition against benefiting from wine from idolaters, or even Gentiles. We'll see there's two separate things happening here. And it's really a whole new topic, which brings us to the end of the Masechta, so it's like sort of 17 Mishnayos here, and like a whole new world. There is a question why we didn't start a new parak here, and the Tiferes Yisrael asks it, and the answer is that since the previous Mishnah was talking about the arguments of the Gentiles and the idolaters against the Jews, we didn't want to end on that topic, so we're continuing on here. Whatever the case is, we need just a moment's introduction to understand sort of the framework, the halachic framework of these things, so we can see the big picture first. So the Torah itself would prohibit any liquid that is poured in the benefit or towards the benefit or worship of or an act of service to an idol. So that's on a Doraisa level. And that, if it's wine, would be called Yayin Nesech. It's poured wine from a libation. Okay? It could be any other liquid as well, hypothetically. But as a matter of practice, in the time of the Mishnah, that wasn't typically the case. The case was they did offer libations to their idols, but it was typically, specifically wine. And therefore, the rabbis made a din derabanan. And they said any wine that belongs to an idolater, they were thinking generic Gentile, but in the time of the Mishnah, Gentiles were in general idolaters. So we have to assume that they used some of that wine or poured some of that wine in an act of worship, service, recognition of their idol. In fact, it was a common practice at the time that, like, sort of each, you know, jug or barrel or vat of wine, they would do a little bit splashed off for the sake of the idol. So that is a din derabanan, and it's called stam yenam. Stam means it has no specific identity, so it's like anonymous or generic or default. And yenam means their wines. So we assume that any wine that belongs to an idolater, we treat it as if we knew for certain that he had decanted some or poured some for his idol, and therefore we treat all of idolater's wine to be forbidden, and iser hanat, could any benefit from it. So the doraisa would be if it actually had been poured, but the derabanan is we treat it as it very well may have been poured, and therefore we treat it strictly, that it's all aser bahana, no benefit whatsoever. Meaning if you received such a thing, you couldn't sell it to somebody else or gift it and that kind of thing. In addition, the rabbis extended it further, and they said, even if we say we have Jewish wine, let's say, but an idolater stuck his finger inside of it and he touched it, so that also is going to make the wine forbidden. And the reason why is because we're concerned that when he stuck his finger in, he made a little tiny splash, and that little tiny splash of his finger was intended to be like a splash in recognition or service of, etc., dedicated to his idol. So once you have idolaters touching wine, you have to treat it as potentially as tam yenam, and therefore, like yayin nesech, it's aser b'hana, at least midurabon. Now, if one knew that the person who did the touching of the wine was not an idolater, let's say he was a monotheist, so there's no reason to believe that it was used as a libation for idols. Nevertheless, there's an additional rabbinic restriction against any wine that was owned or touched by a Gentile, even if it was owned by a Jew but touched by a Gentile, even if he couldn't splash it, and the like. Still, it's all forbidden for a different reason. The prohibition against what's referred to as benosechem, their daughters, but the general idea of assimilation and intermarriage with the Gentiles. So any wine, even Jewish wine, even kosher wine, which happens to have been touched or poured by a Gentile, even if that Gentile is, a God-fearing monotheist non-Jew, that wine becomes forbidden, midurabanan, and that iser is not an iser hana'a, like yayin nesech would be, it's just an iser shtia, it's an iser, it's prohibited to drink it, it's not kosher for drinking, for consumption, but such one could, let's say, re-gift or sell and the like. Okay? And then just sort of rounding out halach lamaisa, nowadays there is a notion that if the wine has been cooked, mavushal, been boiled, then it would, since it wouldn't be appropriate ever for a Gentile to use such wine in service of his idol, it becomes, impervious to this din derabanan of stam yenam. And similarly, if a non-idolatrous Gentile touched such wine, it wouldn't render it forbidden to drink. Okay? That's the framework over here. So in short, we have essentially, once a non-Jew touches the wine, it becomes forbidden at all events. The Rama says that nowadays, that's already 500 years ago, and now in his day, and certainly more today, it's not the practice of Gentiles to do libations. We'll assume that all Gentiles touching wine, unless they know otherwise, are not doing it for libation purposes, and therefore we're not talking about the Isser of Hana, but we'll be talking in practice to the Isser of Shtiyah, the prohibition against drinking it, as a general prohibition, which is so we shouldn't intermarry with the Gentiles in general. Okay, so that's the framework of where we're going with these Mishnayos. Now, this Mishnah Ches, the first of the Mishnayos in the series, wants to define at what point this restriction kicks in, because grapes are not prohibited in this way, and the juice of grapes is not prohibited this way. Only once it becomes like kind of like grape juice that's like wine that could be offered for Nesachim as a libation, that it becomes forbidden. So at what point? So our Mishnah is going to try to define the point, and actually at the end I'll sum up this Mishnah is not lahalach at all. But first we'll learn the Mishnah, of course, then we'll discuss the halacha l'maisa. So our Mishnah's basic answer to the question of when do the restrictions kick in is when the wine has pooled in the collection pool or bor. So basically you have sort of two components to this wine pressing, facility. You have the picture you should have in your mind is essentially like a platform, and from the platform is like a down slope, which ends in like a little tube or pipe, and out of the pipe, the liquid pours into a collection receptacle called the bore, or the pit in the ground, the collection pit. So the platform and the downslope area and the pipe that comes out of it is called the press, if you will. It's called in Hebrew the gas or the gat, like kiryat gat. And the basic answer of our mission, anyways, is the restriction kicks in as soon as the liquid ends up inside the bore, inside the collection pool. So how did this work? So step one is, essentially, the person making the wine would pile the grapes on the downslope, on the ramp down, and he would tread on it with his feet, and then liquid would come out, and then it would kind of, slide down to the bottom, go through the pipe, and into the bore. After he stepped on that and did like the initial treading, so there's a big mixture like of grape juice combined with grape skins and grape seeds and the like. So then what he would do is he would take his hands and collect all of that mix together and put it at the top on called the platform, and where he makes like a big mound. And that mound is called a tapuach in the Mishnah, like a round pile. And then essentially just, gravity would do its thing, and it would, as it piles up, much of the juice would seep to the bottom and then out of the tapuach at the top of the platform and down the ramp and then through the pipe and into the collection pit. Okay, at the very end of that process, they would even, add weights or whatever to press down on the big pile of grape skins, the white grape skins, to get the last bits of juice out and get the, to roll down and into the bore of the collection pit as well. So our Mishnah says, inside, lokhin gas be'uta mina over kochavim. Now, this means, not literally, but it means one may purchase the wine, the grape juice, I should call it, the grape juice that's still on the press from the Gentile. And the literal words means lokhin gas, you could take, it means the press, but it doesn't mean the press, it means the wine or juice on the press. Be'uta, like ba'et, ba'ata means a kick. Be'uta means sort of it's been trampled on. So grapes have been trampled on, and the juice is now flowing out of it. You may purchase that grape juice for drinking, or drink it with a straw, or whatever it is. Min ovid kochavim, even if the person's an idolater, even though his feet touched it, etc. Afal pishu notel b'yado v'nosan l'tapuach. And even more than that, even though he's actually putting his hands into the juice, because after he treads on the grapes and making the mush of the juice and the grape skins, etc., he's going to take his hands and scoop that whole mush up, and now pick it up and put it on the top of the platform, the tapuach. So he's putting his hands into this grape juice, yet you're still allowed to purchase the grape juice and drink it then before it goes into the bore, because it's not yet considered to be the kind of juice that would ever be used for a libation. It's kind of under production right now. Venonase yain nesech, it doesn't become yain nesech, the prohibited poured wine, ad sheire labor, until the juice is now, it collects and pours into the collection pit at the bottom of the hole in the ground. Yarad labor, once it has descended and flowed into the pit in the ground, mashababur asur, whatever is now collected, the juice collected into that pit becomes forbidden, meaning asur bahana, no benefit at all can be gained from it, because it's sort of yain nesech, right? It's Gentile wine that he touched. Vashaar mutar, whatever's not in the bore, the hole in the ground itself, remains permitted even to drink, ostensibly. And that, the Chiddush Tosfos says, even is that if it's sort of like, let's say it poured out of the tube, but it overshot the bore to the far side, so still it'd be permitted because it hasn't yet gone to the bore, even though it's on the, you know, finished being pressed, if you will. Okay, so in short, the Mishnah is saying, once again, the defining moment of the prohibition of a Gentile's wine is once it gets into the boar. This is not la halacha. Well, this is what was called Mishnah Rishona, the original teaching of the Mishnah way back in the Tanaim, but they later on made it more strict, and they said as soon as the wine has been physically separated from the skins, even though the wine is still flowing on the, called the down ramp of the gas, already then that distinct entity is considered to be juice, which is the anesach, and forbidden to get benefit from it. And more than that, sort of the contiguous, everything that is touching, all the liquid that's touching on the gas itself, also becomes forbidden as yayin nesach already, at least with the rabbanon. So we're much more strict. As soon as it separates out, so you physically separate it out, the liquid from the skins, it all becomes at and on the press already yayin nesach aser bahana.